Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 14 of the White Book Podcast.
Slop / the White Book, episode 512. That's pretty hefty.
Wait, 512? Wow, I'm sorry. That number just like washed over me for a second, Will.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's
when you start hitting those multiples of, you know, ancient RAM values, then I'm like, oh, that's legit. You know, 256 was a thing, 512. Yeah, I guess if we ever hit 1024.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's what? How long has White Book been around now, Will? This is, what, the 10th anniversary? Last year was? Didn't you just tell me this?
Yeah, I think we literally talked about that last episode, honestly. I think last year was the 10 year.
Yeah. Okay. So that means you'd have to be doing this for 20 years. We would be very close to 50.
Oh, geez.
I'm just being honest, Will. I'm going to turn 40 in a year and a half. Glazer's 41. So, like.
Oh, yeah. It's creeping up on me this fall. So, yeah.
So, you
babies.
Oh, yeah. So,
who will be listening to podcasts in 10 years?
Sam. We established this. Maybe David. David
Sam,
really likes
who I assume will have an awesome job that he totally kicks ass at and loves at that point.
I agree.
Of time.
Yeah. I agree. 10 years, well, definitely.
Yeah.
Sam will have a new job. Kyle will still be in law school.
Ouch. Ah. Jesus.
Ouch. Yeah, ouch. Oh. He'll still be paying for it at least.
I mean, it depends. He could be the most successful lawyer in middle Iowa in the world. There you go. Oof.
Middle Iowa in the world. I like the implication that there are parts of middle Iowa not in the world.
Much of middle Iowa is not in the world.
There is some great Midwest Gothic to be written about that, I think.
Definitely. Narratives of Midwest decline. All right.
So in class recently, I guess I should put this under play because it's been happening a ton. I guess not technically in class. So there's a bunch of kids that hang out in my room during all my frees, and lately we've been playing a massive amount of heads up, and there's shit about every state. Like, we've got multiple Wyoming heads up things. Iowa never comes up.
Well, then you just got to put Kyle in there. Boom. Done.
Yeah.
Just like what would be like, you know, now Kyle Vansel. Boom. You'd be like, Kyle Vansel, Iowa. Boom. Done. The kids would get it.
Yeah. Well, obviously, all the kids listen to the podcast. They definitely know this exists.
My students know that my history podcast I used to be on exists. Because I say, like, they're like, what are you doing tonight, Mr. Rogers? I'm like, I'm podcasting. And they think I'm doing the history podcast instead of doing this. Or even worse, the Marvel Snap one.
Oh, they know you're doing that one too?
No, they don't know I'm doing. They don't know I'm doing either of these. I mean, I'm sure some truly nosy kids have found it, like the one that forced me to like lock my Instagram for the first time. So
in 2016, a kid walked up to me. A kid I was like close to walked up to me. He goes, just looks at me so disappointed. He goes, so Second Sons.
God, 2016.
And I just looked at him and went, we don't talk about that. And he went, good call. And just left. All right. You win, Ricardo. Thanks.
2016. Jesus. That was a long time ago.
I loved that kid. Love. I saw him like less than a year ago. But yeah.
Yeah. I don't think, I mean, maybe after some of them like graduate, they'll be like, hey, Mr. Rogers, like, I knew you did this. But so far, no.
I didn't have the heart to tell you at the time.
Yeah. They're like, you still had control over my graduation fate. I didn't want to relentlessly mock you for doing it. But speaking of students relentlessly mocking me, ooh, let's talk about Ted Lasso.
For Ted Lasso?
Kids don't like Ted Lasso?
All my students do not like
Ted Lasso. Oh, my kids love Ted Lasso.
I did joke with my kid that I have to watch Ted Lasso because otherwise they'll take my white card and, you know, white privilege is too useful in your life.
Wait, are we serious thought?
Wow.
Are we?
The kid was like, yeah, you're right, Mr. Rogers. Like, the kids do not like it. Like,
wait, are your kids going back to a cynical generation? My kids are still in optimism. Like, generations shift in that, whether they're generally optimistic or pessimistic. This has been a very optimistic generation up here.
I would say that they are pretty optimistic, but my kids are big Euphoria kids. Like, that's their kind of energy. Their energy is kind of like, I wouldn't say necessarily optimistic or pessimistic. It's more like, want to be wild, if that makes sense. Like, these, you know what I mean? These kids are that's not true. Some kids are definitely, you know, have gone through it, but a lot of them are like sticking their toes in to, you know, that kind of life. And that's what they're into. Like, they're into that kind of stuff versus like Ted Lasso's like sort of sugar sweetness is not for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, absolutely.
I wouldn't say they're particularly cynical like we were when we were that age. Like, I was so like relentlessly cynical.
Well, our generation is, you know, Rage Against the Machine and all that.
Yeah. Good. I wouldn't say Rage Against the Machine is cynical, actually. It's earnest for all of its like anger. It's not like South Park. We are the generation of South Park. Like, we inflicted that upon generations of Americans.
And are still doing it.
I know. I remember watching South Park first episode.
Yeah, I remember my friends and I like frantically passing VHS tape recordings of South Park amongst
our friends.
Yeah.
Physical media that you physically handed to other people.
Yeah,
oh, man.
Some of us didn't have cable or satellite that got Comedy Central, so we had to share the wealth.
Yeah, I mean, I would literally, at that time we didn't have cable in my parents' house, and my mom let me go to my friend's house across the neighborhood at, I think it was at like 9:45. And the rule was I had to be home within 10 minutes of South Park ending at 10:30. So I would always like run home. And this is like in
middle school. There's something truly beautiful about the dichotomy of this like hard curfew and watching South Park.
Well, you know, I think I begged a lot. I was like, you know, it's what all the kids are talking about.
Do you want me to be a social pariah?
Yeah.
I can be almost 40 and doing podcasts.
Well, even better. He'll soon be almost 50 and doing podcasts.
That's true. I am closer to 50 than I am to 12. So let's talk about Ted Lasso.
Yeah, we tried.
Ted Lasso is great. I like it a lot. Agreed. That's all I have to say.
Agreed. I'll say I did riot a little bit. Definitely set a big pile of tires on fire, broke some windows in a convenience store down the street.
I've enjoyed the first two episodes much more than I did sort of like a lot of the second season. I think it's a little bit more focused so far. It's still kind of like, it's a little like, again, so Ted Lasso, right? Like, so he has, I think, some really like high highs, but sometimes it still like gets in its own way sometimes. And, you know, like, I I'll say two things. One, I want to call a shot. This is not me. Everybody, any spoilers about Ted Lasso or whatever. Ted's going back to Kansas at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
he has to. Yeah. Yes.
And yeah.
That's how it ends, right? Like, it has to. Yeah. He has to go back to his
family. I mean, he doesn't have to go. There's other things they could have Ted do. Like, I mean, I think that's like, particularly at the end of this last episode and the message they wanted you to get about the end of the last episode, I'm like, oh, like, Ted is definitely going back to Kansas. Like, yeah. Like, he's definitely going back. Like, there's other things they could do. He could, you know, go and work for, you know, not go back to the U.S., but not go back to Kansas. You know, like, go back coach football, right? He could go. American football does get played in the UK and in mainland Europe. Like, there's like, he could, that could be what it's like. Soccer isn't for him, but he learned a lot about this. You know what I mean? Like, there's other endings that they could do that would be a satisfying, and, like, and Ted moves beyond Richmond kind of thing.
Arguably would be a little better than him just going back to Kansas. Like, to some extent that feels like him just regressing from the growth he's had.
I mean, so, as a father, I don't agree.
Yeah, I think it's going to be about his son.
Yeah, it's going to be about his kid. Yeah. Like, okay. I wouldn't be shocked if, like, he's literally, like, coaching his son's soccer team in the last shot of the show.
That would be a good close.
It's a very Ted Lasso ending, right? Yeah. Like, like, hey, he coached a Premier League team, and now he's coaching his son's soccer team. And everyone goes, what's important to you? And he goes something like, Family we're born with, family we choose, and has some Ted Lassoism, we call it a day.
Yeah.
I
don't really care where we're going, to be perfectly honest. Doesn't matter. I'm enjoying the ride.
I mean, the only thing I care is about Roy and Keeley getting back together.
They're not going to get back together.
Hence the rioting earlier. That wasn't obvious.
I felt like the emotional note of this last episode was that they were not going to get back together. Like, it felt like...
Wow, I 100% got the opposite.
We're talking about the second episode, right?
When Roy gives his big long sports metaphor about
moving on,
part of him wishes he'd stuck it out and said, you know, that he's not that man, but like that this show has been so much about growth for so many characters. It feels weird to me to tee that up and then say, "You know what? This character doesn't grow. He is that man, and he stays that man." I don't buy that.
Interesting, because the way I took it was that it was about moving on, right?
Oh, and, no.
Like, that's what I took that speech to be about.
I took it as, I'm afraid I made the wrong decision, and he can't undo his soccer decision. He can't.
Right.
He can't go back and play in the Premier League at this point. But he could get back together with Keeley.
He could. Yeah, no, I mean, I can see that as an interpretation. For me, I took it as more of a, like, I kind of got the feeling at the end of the second season that the show felt like it wanted to move beyond the Roy and Keeley dynamic. And
so what it's trying to move beyond is romance as its central premise.
That's fair.
Like, I think that, like, they felt like by the end of season two, they leaned too heavily into the various romances to the detriment of the rest of the show. Like, a lot of the, like, Roy and Keeley were still successful, right? But every other romantic relationship was kind of a mess. And I think they were like, this isn't what this show. Yes, the obvious terrible one, yes. But, like, which we're all pretending didn't happen at this point. In
which the show seems to be also pretending didn't
happen. Yeah, that's what I mean. But, like, wait, let me
though, finish. Though it is...
Wait, hang on, let me finish the point.
I'll let you finish that thought.
So the idea is, I think, that, like, for season two, a lot of it became a schmaltzy romance. Like, the rom-communism shit. Like, and it just didn't... It was cute, but it wasn't the show, right? And I think they're just, like, I think we'd rather focus on the platonic relationships of our characters and the romantic relationships of our characters as a, like, means of growth and a means of, like, found family rather than romance, which romance isn't really found family in the same way, right? Like, it's more obvious and more, like, over the head and has to be kind of cheesier. And I think it sort of deflates a lot of the message. And I believe, and I could easily be wrong, that outside of the Roy and Keeley, will they, won't they, they're going to just steer away from it for the majority of the season.
And I wouldn't disagree with that. I think it's definitely something. I think I agree. I think, I think because the Ted storyline to me is him coming to terms with both, like, him and his wife remarrying, which I imagine is going to happen in this season, and sort of like what that means for him, and not so much his relationship with that friend of whatever her name is. Who's the boss woman's name?
Rebecca is the boss. The friend. I literally can't remember her her real name.
Or any of the things. Like that. So I definitely agree with you, Glazer. I think though, if Will's right, I can imagine them maybe keeping the Keeley and Roy thing as like a back burner storyline.
Yeah. I don't think it needs to be the main.
Like it was in like the first season and a half or so of the show. But I mean, I thought it was a pretty well executed, actually, like a comedy romance storyline, which is one of the things why I get kind of annoyed with it at the decision that they made kind of towards the end of the second season.
It was great in season one, but in season two, it was a resolved plot line. Like the conflict was just largely missing, right?
Yeah.
And like, that's great, right? If this ends after season one, it's great.
Sure.
But you want them to be in season two. And like, you want them to each have their own storylines, but then you need to keep finding time for scenes. And like, time is a premium here. You need to keep finding time for scenes where they each react to the stuff happening with other people.
I mean, that's fair, but like, I think other sitcoms by this crew have done resolved romance plots well. And going back to the will they or won't they well actually feels like regression and lazier writing. But, you know, different strokes for different folks.
I mean, I think it depends. Oh. Like, if they get back together, I fully expect them to. It's Ted Lasso. It feels like it's going to largely end up with a happy ending. But even if they don't, it depends on who they are as people in the next stage of this. Like, has both characters are fairly static to this point, and I feel like they need to be dynamic if they're going to get back together.
Yeah. So, what is his name? The guy who goes to work for Anthony Stewart Head. It's escaping me the character's name.
Nate.
I think Nate and Roy end up coaching at the end of the season together.
Yeah. Oh, like I would be surprised if Nate doesn't end up the coach of Richmond.
Sense. Oh, he's 100% going to be the coach of Richmond. Like, when Ted leaves.
Yeah. Ted will go home and Nate will coach Richmond.
With Beard.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wait, you think Beard will stay or Beard will go home with...
No, Beard is staying.
Okay.
You think Beard is staying in England?
I couldn't quite track.
I think he's going to go back.
Which...
No, I think Beard is staying.
I think Beard is going to go back.
I mean, I kind of hope he does not stay. Or at least that they jettison all of the Jane storyline. Because that was good for about one gag. And then they just keep going back to that. It's not great.
It's just a sentence. Like, I like the whole this Beard is in the story, but it's not Beard's story, so we just don't get a lot of extra Beard stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with that. It's just the stuff that we do get with his love life is like, wow, that is toxic. What is going on here? And then they just keep going to whatever the next thing is.
It's just meant to be. Yeah, it's not his story. Like,
yeah.
The idea is, and I think I like it, but it's a joke that either works for you or doesn't. But I like it in the concept that, like, think about how many of your friends at work, right? Like, that you're really, like, close with at work, that you talk to all the time, that you go get a beer with, have all this other shit going on that you just will never have any idea about.
Yeah.
Like, they'll occasionally throw in a line. You're like, oh, shit, that's crazy. And then, like, you're back to, like, whatever other usual conversation you have.
I thinking about that, we did start rewatching Ted immediately after watching episode one of season three. Mm-hmm. And on the rewatch, I did catch, and I think you'd mentioned it before, Aaron, that they'd been hinting about Beard. And I swear, episode two, I think,
yep.
Ted says, like, first thing in the office, like, did you even go home last night? And Beard just shakes his head no. So... Actually, it's been interesting catching a lot of foreshadowing that totally blew right past me the first viewing. I mean, I won't list everything, but stuff like Sam's first lines to Rebecca that we ever hear or see is him asking her out. And it's played off as like a comedic, you know, mix up in his phrasing. Let's see what else. Nate at one point mentions his greatest fear is aging. And then, of course, they use that as the illustration of him turning evil in season two. Yeah, just stuff like that. It's been really interesting to see.
I mean, the show is very, very subtly about relationships with father figures, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not.
I'm not
hammered.
Sure it's subtle. Oh, I think Jamie Tart is a character. And his father.
Well, also, okay. Ted's trauma involves his dad.
Yes, but right. Like a lot of the like smaller Nate choosing between a father figure and a disproving father. Mm-hmm. And like Rebecca, it's her ex-husband, not her father, but he's presented as older and having this like power over her. Yeah. Like the power dynamics of older men. Yeah, and her dad cheating on her mom. And like just basically everyone but Roy.
Well, Roy kind of has, because his dad sucked too, didn't he?
Yes, but he doesn't talk about it much.
He talks sort of about it a little bit in the second season, right?
Yeah, I think he mainly just kind of says, yeah, my dad sucked. My grandpa basically raised me. I'm pretty sure is what he says, right?
Yeah, and his mom was decent, right? I think it's the thing.
Yeah, right? That sounds right.
Yeah. There's some of that in like the second season, I think. But for me also, I think, what's the name of the reporter? I think the reporter's...
Independent.
Yeah, his book is going to be, so this is my guess, is that they're going to reconcile with Nate like in the second to last episode or whatever, and like Ted's going to have to make a decision about like what he's going to do, and like the book is going to be about like aging and moving on, and that's like the book is going to make Ted make the decision he makes at the end. Like he's going to read the book about the year, and it's going to cause him to like finally make his choice.
My working assumption has been instead that something breaks Ted. I think that's why they're introducing this new player. I think something ends up breaking Ted's spirit, and Trent Crim's writing about Ted is what re-inspires him.
That's a good guess too.
Okay,
that's where my immediate assumption went. I thought the new player was going to change the dynamic of the team and they were going to become wildly successful, but in a way that Ted didn't like, and it was going to sort of break him.
He'll be a Jamie that doesn't listen to him, and his way does work for a while, and Ted can't handle that. I could see that, and that would be a nice counterpoint for Trent, since we just had Roy showing off how much of a dick Trent was in his early career. So it would also show his growth. That'd be good. See that.
All right. But like all of this is like cool, right? But like I'm not really watching the show for how the plots resolve.
You're just like here for the laughs?
I'm here. I mean, not even the laughs. Like I think that I know that I generally like my TV shows to have an optimistic view of humanity. Uh-huh. And I truly believe in general and people trying to do the right thing and people like empathy being a guiding force toward helping each other. And like the show does that. And I like it and like it, like, and when it doesn't do that in really interesting ways. And I think it's very smart with how it's written and I really enjoy it.
I agree on all of the above.
Also, none of my problems from season two have been present in season three so far, so that's great.
Well, knock on wood here. There's an episode tomorrow. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we will definitely see how it goes. We get 12 this season, so.
All right. Well, and I've noticed they're longer episodes, too. These first two were like 49 minutes or something, weren't they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, not as long as that god awfully long Mandalorian episode. This is me translating, translating us. God. Episode 3, right? Yeah, 2 weeks ago, I guess, at this point, was easily the worst episode of Mandalorian, I think.
I actually have kind of lost track. Was that the trip down to the city?
No, 2 is they go down to the city, Bo saves him.
Okay.
He falls. I know, he falls into the water and realizes it's deeper and it knocks him out.
Yeah.
And Bo sees the Mythosaur, the end. Episode 3.
Wait, hang on, time out. Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
What? Can I curse, Will?
Sure.
Why the f*** am I supposed to care about something called a Mythosaur? And could they have named it anything more on the nose?
It's Star Wars. Of course they could have.
Yeah, like, the name is because it's Star Wars.
Could have been Plot-tritus.
This show has not dwelled on the Mythosaur thing, though it's been mentioned in the past. But basically it was kind of a symbol of the original Mandalore. I think maybe he rode one or something. I forget.
Look, Gleezer, it's a religious symbol in the world's stupidest religion, which is that we don't take our helmets off. I'm sorry. The death, what are they called?
I didn't think that was going to be such a big part of everything, but I like that one of the dudes has kids because he clearly, cursing again, with his helmet on. And just like, could you imagine
Well, and assumedly she did too. I can't imagine this is a religion where it's okay for a Mandalorian to have kids with a non-Mandalorian, right?
Yeah, what happens if they accidentally take their helmets off and they're like, oh god, what?
We just don't say anything about it, I guess.
Yeah, just like,
I don't know.
This is the way.
It's just the stupid. I'm sorry. Star Wars is a franchise full of stupid religions. I mean, the Sith exist. But oh my god, is the fucking Death Watch Mandalorian dumb. They're just dumb. And
wait,
they talk
I wasn't with you.
Right? Isn't that the
death? These Mandalorians. What are they, not the regular Mandalorians. Death's
no, they're not. Death Watch was the ones what's her name? That Starbuck led. Why can't I actually think of her character's name?
Sure. The Death's Head 2. The Death's Head 2. The Death's Head 2 Mandalorians are the worst. I didn't hate
these idiots followed Darth Maul.
When Roy complained at the first episode, Roy was like, this religion is so stupid. I was like, man, it's barely in the show, right? Like, it's in passing. It makes him go places and do things. And him going places and doing things is always fun. And now we've had, three straight episodes of just this religion, and Roy was right. I was wrong. Yeah. This is terrible.
It's just weird that it's, doubling down on that. I thought it would kind of be, a background, the starting point, and has he interacted with other people and the other Mandalorians that are not as restrictive and stuff, that he would kind of grow and whatever. But so far the message of the show has kind of been to double down on, yes, the most bizarrely restrictive version of this is the correct one. We're going to come back to that. And that feels weird.
I'm sorry. It is truly the stupidest religion. I just can't get over it. It's just every time they talk about it, they don't take their helmets off. It's just like.
So if Ted Lasso season three, has thus far been to me about an A-, maybe a B+, but in that general area, Mandalorian has been a solid D.
I wouldn't say
a D.
D.
I think I've been bored. I thought every time they talk about, which is episode
the one with
four,
the Grogu backstory and they rescue the kid.
So I was okay with the Grogu backstory. The rescue the kid thing was terrible.
I thought it was good, but
yeah.
So that's your kind of episode. That's a little too monster of the week for me.
That's fair.
I mean, a bunch of this show, especially season one, has been very monster.
Yes, but season one was monster of the week with a mystery and a tour of the.
Yeah.
It's universe, and it was cool and new, and going back to it several years in real time later is just we did this, but now you're doing this while not shutting up about your stupid religion.
It's fair. I mean, I did get to the end of the fourth episode, which I did enjoy, and said, oh, wait, we're halfway through this season. It's this one. So they haven't gone anywhere.
It's only eight long?
Wow. Yeah, it's a Disney Plus show. It's only eight.
Yeah, this it does feel very when you give me that context, it just feels like they don't really quite know where they were going, and that seemed to kind of be the same case in a lot of these Disney Plus shows, not just The Mandalorian and not just Star Wars stuff. That they're just
all Disney Plus shows, even that stupid basketball one I watched, had suffered from that issue.
I don't even know what that one was.
It was starring John Stamos. It was bad, but like it was the good kind of bad for where my mental health was at the time. But let me just double back though to the third episode, because the third episode felt like John Favreau and like whoever helps him write, they ate a bunch of edibles, watched the dailies of Andor, and said, "This is great Star Wars. We can do this." And they were like, "Let's do an Andor episode of Mandalorian," and then misses the whole point of Andor. Plus, whoever like did a script pass is like, "We have to service the really stupid political situation J.J. Abrams created in The Force Awakens." Because the new Disney canon of like what the New Republic is just sucks. And like, as someone who truly loved the New Republic in the like old era, it like in gets Legends. Under my skin. Yeah, the Legends era, whatever. The pre-Disney era. Like, it gets under my skin. Like, the more, like, every time I read something about it, I'm just like, this is so dumb. Like, it makes the Vizen Bong look like brilliant. Like, all the stuff they've come up with is just terrible. And you're just like, ugh. And like, I was truly infuriated at the end of the third episode. I was like, Star Wars. Like, it's like, why did I get, like, Andor did such a good job of resetting me towards this franchise. And then Mandalorian like lit it on fire. I was like angry. And then I let it go. But I was angry for like 4 or 5 days. And I just like, it's so bad. Like, it doesn't even like have a coherent political message. Like, it's like kind of trying to say, oh yeah, the good guys are kind of corrupt, and the change, like when there's a change in government, it doesn't really change much. I'm like, okay, it's a fine political philosophy. But then just like can't figure out if that's what they're doing, or it's that the Empire is infiltrating the New Republic, which is kind of the note that they end on. And it's just like, what is going on here? Like, why did the Moff Gideon already escape off screen? And it's just like, what? Oh.
Big stuff off screen. That sounds very modern Star Wars to me.
It is. Ugh. But it's a lot of Coruscant in the last two episodes, though, which I did appreciate. Like, beautiful Coruscant.
Yeah. I mean, the show is still, like, gorgeous and, like, makes
me... You mean Space Vegas?
Yeah. Yeah. It makes me feel like immersed in that world, which is probably what's keeping me watching.
I'm still watching because my wife wants to.
I mean, and they did a really good job of capturing like the prequel look in the Grogu flashback. Like, it did feel like something that could have been in the prequels. Like, that in the future, some future George Lucas Jr. will go in and like insert that scene into the prequels.
You say that like it's a good thing.
So. I mean, for like consistency's sake, like Revenge of the Sith is like, as far as Star Wars movies go, is fine. Like, we've seen these all. We've all seen these movies, right? Mm. Rise of Skywalker exists.
So, like, there's
like
two unequivocally good Star Wars movies and six that are various stages of problematic.
I assume you're saying Last Jedi and Empire Strikes Back? No. Are you a Force
New
Awakens
Hope truth? And no, Empire. New Hope and Empire.
Yeah.
New Hope.
Yeah, New Hope is just a fine movie. Like, it's a fine movie,
I agree.
It's inconsistent with some stuff from later on because, like, they didn't know they were going to make all the later on stuff. But, like, I'm not holding that against it.
Just stand alone. Like, it's the only one I could just watch that and never watch anything else. Yep. And, like, that would be good.
Yeah.
I don't hate whatever the first of the new trilogy was.
Force Awakens.
It was fine.
Yeah.
It had promise.
It was like, but most of what was fine at that.
Most of what was good about it was that it was promising to be smart going forward. And then it is. Whatever.
Yeah.
And I would have liked the second of those. And then, like, it's impossible for me to view the second without thinking about the third, and those two movies are like the most incompatible movies that have ever been in the same series.
Yeah, it's pretty upsetting. It's weird. I mean, I recently, with a 7-year-old, watched seven? Yeah. Seven? I think it's seven. Yeah, Abby's seven, right? That's second grade. So, she told me that movie, Rise of Skywalker, is her favorite Star Wars movie. And I was like, all right, I'll watch it with you, but you got to tell me why. She couldn't tell me why it was, but it is. It is her favorite Star Wars movie. And
wait, who?
My wife's goddaughter.
Oh, okay.
And when I was, when we were in California, and I was watching her, and so we watched it. And that movie, it is, when you come in with zero expectations, it is better than you would think. But it does have that line, somehow Palpatine survived, which is just it's
off screen,
like,
man.
It's both like funnier the second time you like. It's like infuriating the first time you hear it. Like when you're like sitting here, it's like, what am I watching? Like, why did I come to this movie? That is what I felt like when I was in the theater. It's way funnier the second time you hear it. But also you're like, that's it? Like, that's like, is just Oscar Isaac says somehow he survived. And that's just like, we're going with that. That's what we're doing. It's like, okay.
They figured they'd release a tie-in comic that'd fill in the backstory.
I'm sure they did. Well, they have the bunch of Mandalorian episodes to do, so. With that doctor dude. Anyway, I'll talk real quick about Shadow and Bone.
I can talk about Shadow and Bone too.
Well, I'll be real quick. So Al and I the other night were like, all right, new season of Shadow and Bone. We're both in the movie mood to watch something together. Let's do it. And then we realized, and I literally would have lost like hundreds of dollars, that we didn't actually finish the first season.
What?
I would have bet hundreds of dollars that we'd finished the first season. But no, there's still two left.
Oh my goodness.
So we watched the fifth episode of the sixth, right? The second to last. I think it's the fifth. They go to find the deer at the end of the episode. And the main couple are reunited. And then we're like, and then, you know, we went to bed. Like, our plan was like to watch one episode of Shadow Bone and new season, then go to bed. But no, instead we watched one episode of the first season. So at some point we will finish Shadow and Bone. Maybe in 5 years, but we will definitely do it. All right, Glazer, tell us about Shadow and Bone. What was your feelings?
So, ready? I watched the first two episodes of season two, and I realized that even though I watched the recap for season one, I don't remember a single damn thing about a single damn one of these people. I'm so lost. Everyone's doing things with clearly established motivations that I don't understand, and well-defined characters that I don't get, and I am so motherfucking lost. It's unbelievable. I feel like I'm stupid watching the show. Like, and I, like, I'm usually good at this kind of thing, and I'm watching, I'm just like, wait, that person's, was that it person in season one? And like two sentences, I'm like, they were clearly in season one. Who are they? Like, it's so bad. And then they use all these different terms for magic, and like, I swear to God, I don't know how this happened, but I've never heard any of those terms before.
Grisha and
I'm just so lost. I think I give up because I don't know what happened. It made me feel like a crazy person. I was like at least I finished it, I guess. But like, I don't remember. I remember a sand boat and light being her power. And that's what I got.
But she also gets, almost sleeps with the Darkling. She does that.
Cool. That's yeah. So Darkling.
She almost sleeps with Jigsaw from Punisher.
Got it. I didn't.
The hot guy. The hot dark haired guy. Not the hot guy with no hair. That's her love triangle. There's like the hot guy with no hair.
So is
the hot guy with lots of hair.
Is this the show where like they tortured people for potentially having magic, or am I just on a totally different show?
They don't. Some of the people don't like magic. Like the like tall, handsome Viking looking man. His people don't like magic.
Yeah,
dude, I give up. This just isn't gonna happen.
Huh. But you can't make fetch happen, man. So,
well, at some point here, I'll get around to watching this season. I enjoyed season one pretty well, and enjoyed most of the books. So, yeah,
isn't there like a new one coming out soon?
I think so. I've read the main trilogy and then the duology that she did. And then I think she's done maybe like three that are more standalone about like other side characters. And I've not caught up on those.
Cool. All right. I'll talk real quick about The Bay season four. The Bay is a British procedural show. Surprise, surprise, about a home resource officer. That's what it's called. It's what's it called in the UK? Her job is to deal with the like family resource officer of like people who are victims of crime. And so there's like a mystery plus like her helping support the family as they deal with like a family member being killed. The first three seasons were really good. They had both good mysteries and good characterization, and were pretty interesting and pretty like empathetic. And the first episode launched like I think last Thursday on BritBox, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it set up a good mystery. It set up good characters. It's continuing like good storylines with the lead actress. So definitely, if you are a fan of these kind of shows, it remains a really good example of the genre.
Okay. I have watched yet more of The Sex Lives of College Girls.
And how has that been?
It's a better show than the name implies, but a worse show than I usually continue to watch. Okay. It is the show that we watch when we go, we have seen everything we are currently really watching and just need an episode of something before we go to bed.
Gotcha.
And it is perfectly cromulent for that. The characters are strangely very often unlikable, which really hurts. But other than that, it's fairly good hijinksy college bullshit. It's okay. I don't really recommend it. But if you watch it, you'll go, yeah, this is a show I watched.
Okay.
That has some value. Hey, and it's way the F more memorable than Shadow and Bone.
There you go. It's the other Mindy Kaling show, right?
Yes, it's not the Mindy Project. This is this one.
Well, but she also has that other show that everybody hated.
Velma. Oh, the Velma?
Yeah, I have not even attempted, but man, no. People said that was bad.
Yeah, she's got like plot attention problems where she's like, she starts with a good idea and it's like, I want a totally different kind of show with this character now. Bye. And just jump somewhere else. And that was the problem. And the Mindy Project's a problem now.
Yeah. I mean, she's not a great plot writer. That was definitely a case with both her office writing and her, the Mindy Project, definitely.
So this has absolutely the same problem, but like, because she's not starring, it's less of a concern because it's not necessarily the same character. Like there's four girls, right? So like one will be suddenly randomly out of character, but the other three are still okay. So that helps. When Mindy was suddenly a different person in different situations herself, and she was like the whole show, it was a problem.
Agreed. Agreed.
So this is like bad, but the acceptable kind of bad.
Okay. So like Riverdale season one kind of bad.
No. I think Riverdale season one is just kind of good.
Okay.
So yeah, season one is I agree. Season one's pretty good.
What is an exception? The first season of not Riverdale, the show that really badly wanted Sabrina.
Okay.
Like it's bad, and like you'd never watch it again. But if you watched it, you would just be like, okay, look, yeah. I watched Sabrina, and like there was some magic dumb shit, and everyone was kind of stupid. But like it was a show I watched, and I laughed and. And yeah, it was there.
Okay.
That's that show. Which is like, honestly, and like, I like it more than the season of Mandalorian.
Ooh, boy.
Because like, I don't have feelings toward this, and my feelings toward the new season of Mandalorian are mostly negative.
It's fair.
So, what's next?
Three Pines. So this is a what's really annoying about this was actually I discovered it because I read an article about how Amazon canceled it. So I was like, oh, but that actually sounds really good. If Amazon had actually advertised it to me, I would have watched it in their window of whether they're gonna renew it or not. It is inspired by some really famous crime novels published in Canada that are set in the eastern townships of Quebec. It's a really empathetic police commissioner sort of solving a series of murders in various. Some of them have really good mysteries. Some it's more of like a character study. It's like really, really well done. It has the guy who plays Doc Ock in the Spider-Man movies as the lead detective.
I should be able to remember his name. Dang.
it's escaping me at the moment as well.
I like him though.
Yeah, he's really good in it. It has sort of the disappearance of a young indigenous woman is like the central sort of unifying like issue that connects all the different like disparate storylines. And like it, I think, treats that issue as like really respectfully and compellingly as it can in the context of the genre. And I really, really enjoyed this show. And I'm actually really sad that it is not getting another season because it was just really well executed. The mysteries were interesting. And the sort of like, it was a very, very humane version of this kind of storyline that was always very focused on sort of like why things like this happen and how the systems of Canadian society like perpetuate the things that happen and cause people to act the way they do. It was really strong, like really well done, really thoughtful, but not like too dark or violent either. So it was good. Really, really good.
Nice.
All right. Tell us about Shrinking.
Shrinking is the Brett Goldstein. What's Lawrence's first name? Bill Lawrence? Sorry, I'm getting sleepy. We did a full ass podcast. We did two podcasts last night, so my brain's a little fried. Bill Lawrence. And help me, Marshall, from How I Met Your Mother.
Oh my God. Why is it escaping? It's escaping me.
Will, you watch How I Met Your
Jason,
Father.
Jason
Segel.
Segel, Jason.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
So the three of them produce the show. Jason Segel stars. It's a psychiatrist whose wife died the year before, and he let himself fall apart even though he has a teenage daughter. And it's about him trying to find himself again. And it's the exact same tone as Ted Lasso. It's nowhere near the show Ted Lasso is. Oh. Despite that, it is a solid B-level sitcom. I am perfectly happy to watch it. It's like as good as like your Kim's Conveniences of the world. Not the same tone, but as good as like your Kim's, like it's a good sitcom.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything stupid. It remains like when the characters are stupid, it usually is just like, hey, that character is being stupid. We know that character is an idiot. Right. Like, or hey, that character is being stupid in a way that accentuates their character. It's just well plotted, well characterized, and interesting. I am for it. I really think that you guys should watch Shrinking. Both of you would really like it. I think it would annoy Roy, and Will would just straight up enjoy it. But okay. Like, Roy would annoy, still watch, you know what I mean? And like, Will would just like it. Like, there's, if you like Scrubs and Ted Lasso, there's literally no reason not to watch this.
The chatter I've heard is that it's better than Ted Lasso.
Oh, it's definitely not better than Ted Lasso. Like, it's not close. It's better than season 2, I guess. Like there's nothing, it doesn't do anything as egregiously wrong as season 2 of Ted Lasso.
Yeah, people like are standing all over Harrison Ford.
Oh, Harrison Ford is fucking amazing. He's like the best thing in the show. He is absolutely stellar. Jessica Williams, formerly of The Daily Show, is incredible. Like, it is. Jason Segel plays Jason Segel in everything.
Go figure.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's almost like he's himself. All right, whatever. But, it's got, I don't know her real name, but, Dr. Cox's wife in Scrubs.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. She's unreal good in the show. Like, everyone in the show is phenomenal. There are no weak acting performances. There are, to the best of my memory right now, no prominent characters who are underdeveloped unless they are like the significant other of one of the main characters. Like, there's like, sorry, one of the one of Jason Segel's friends, he has his circle, and some of them have significant others, and those significant others are like background characters that are underdeveloped, but like it's sort of like they're implied to have their own life and their own shit going on.
Okay, like Beard?
Yeah, kind of like Beard. And just the whole, it's a smart show. It is not as good as Ted Lasso season 1. And honestly, it's not even really close. And Ted Lasso season 1 is like an A+. It's one of my 15 favorite shows ever. And maybe top 10, I'd have to actually sit down. Whereas this is like, again, like really good, but not great. I don't think it ever actually hits great.
it's never like actually moving or actually hilarious. It's funny and it's smart, but it never like eclipses those, at least for me. There's no "where do you think we are," right? There's no like us learning about Ted's family. Like, there's just, it falls short of that. There's no the Jamie thing, right? Like, it's easy to forget in hindsight because they neutered Jamie as a character pretty effectively for reasons I'm not clear on in season two. But Jamie in season one is a stellar character.
Yeah. He fills a good role.
So, real quick, since we're talking about Jason Segel, it's not on here, Will, but is it true that Barney actually came back to, How I Met Your Father?
Funny thing, because normally we watch the new How I Met Your Father episode right before I podcast. And so we were rushing to get dinner cooked and watch that so I could report to you guys. And then we noticed something funny. We got to the end of the episode and we're like, that was weird. Barney didn't appear. What the hell? Somehow we never watched it last week. So I will be watching that episode immediately after we're done podcasting.
Well, you'll have to report it next time. So one quick How I Met Your Other thing that the internet actually, like one of those like random internet videos broke my mind about Barney, which was that what if Barney was not actually as bad as he was, but it was just Ted who was telling the story to his children, was just projecting all of the awfulness that Ted was, which, like, if you read between the lines, like, I mean, Ted's behavior from, like, the second season to the final season and then the last episode, include after his wife's dead, like, it's just abhorrent, like, throughout the show. Like, to make himself look better, he puts a bunch of stuff on Barney as he tells this story that is not as bad as the actual like person that Barney actually is. So do we get anywhere close to like a real version of Barney as a character?
Interesting. And I'm gonna have to keep my eyes.
Whoa. Anyway, because Ted sucks. Anyway, do we want to talk about Brandon Sanderson, or we want to move on?
No, I'm game. You evidently threw it on here, so let's do it.
I threw it on there because did this interview make it to your all's various social media spheres?
Well,
nothing ever does.
I heard it existed, and I didn't really care one way or the other. And I then happened to see, I think it was probably Storm posting Sanderson's rebuttal, or at least response. And I read that.
I did not read that.
And I had no particular urge to read the actual article till another friend directly bugged me about it yesterday and was like, you've got to read it. And so I did sit down to read it yesterday, and I realized about a third of the way through the article, I was holding a like hunched, like pulled in head, like pulled back, jaw half open, you know, shocked, appalled, offended pose. Like, unconsciously I had done that because this is so bizarre to take time out of their like career to write like this about a guy who, according to the article's worst crime is being just a boring, normal dude, but evidently that's a crime. It was so weird.
Interesting. I can see that. So for me, this falls into a profile that is both like so incredibly ungenerous in this way of like someone who loves to read Moby Dick, and that's like every year they reread Moby Dick and talk about it and like Leaves of Grass with their friends, and then is forced to read a bunch of Brandon Sanderson novels and has to then also interact with Brandon Sanderson as a human being, which I can imagine for a person like that, who this author comes off of, that would be extremely insufferable. Because, I mean, and then, but also unbelievably truthful, because like a lot of the fundamental things he says about Sanderson are true. Like, no one is going to accuse him of being the world's greatest wordsmith, right?
Sure.
Like, his, and I think the profile to me didn't interrogate the, like, the thing that is actually, like, floating over the whole profile and him, and actually really deserves way more exploration, which is, of course, Sanderson's Mormonism, you know, and the fact that he is propping up young conservative Mormon authors, including bringing them into helping him write his action sequences in The Stormlight. Like I think that there's The Stormlight Chronicles, like, there's a whole bunch of other Sanderson adjacent stuff that this, like, kind of, like, shed somewhat of a light on, that I was just like, this is way too obsessed with the fact that Brandon Sanderson kind of sucks as a writer, but is really good at world building. And it, like, tries to relate that to his Mormonism, which is, I think, a fine argument, but it, like, doesn't dig in a way that, like, is worth the energy that he puts towards just, like, yeah, Brandon Sanderson is kind of boring.
Yeah, but that's maybe not if his... he hadn't led with the first half of the article or so just being a diatribe about how he personally despises Sanderson, like,
well, his writing. I mean, he didn't.
Well, that's well,
you know, he's boring.
He spends more time on his writing, but I'm pretty sure he takes some personal digs at Sanderson as a person as well, and even I think. There's some tone here that is, let's say, not positive towards his fandom either. So,
well, I mean, definitely.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, it was written in such an abrasive way up front for so long that, like, there's a lot of stuff that it could have tackled and interrogated and, like, would have been interesting for me to ponder, but, like, that's not what he wrote, so
no.
That's for somebody else to do, I guess.
It's true. It's true. I did laugh really hard when he said that no one has sex in Brandon Sanderson novels. I was like, yeah, that's kind of true.
I mean, yes, that is kind of true. I mean, he doesn't write sex scenes, but there are a couple married couples in the Stormlight archive that,
of course, there are.
Are, I mean, clearly having sex.
Technically, in Mistborn, doesn't the female character from Mistborn, who gets overshadowed by her male counterpart in the second book, don't they have premarital sex in that book?
I do not recall offhand.
I think they do.
It's been too long since I've read it. I mean, and yeah, if you want to interrogate some Sanderson stuff in Mistborn and let's say romantic entanglements, we could do that with the secondary female character in that book and her questionable relationship, which I think definitely includes a physical component, but that's probably a discussion that people don't want to listen to me drone on about.
Well, I think they've actually listened to us drone on about Brandon Sanderson a lot in this over the course of Props and Slops, right? Because both you and Glazer, right? Glazer, you read Stormlight Chronicles, right? Or Storm
Archive?
I do. Archive. I don't know how I ended up reading that. It might be Will's fault.
But, I don't remember now, but I definitely talk it up to people, so it's possible.
I think it's pretty good. Every time I've tried to read anything else by him, I don't really like it, but I really enjoyed that one.
Yeah. I still haven't forgiven him for Mistborn.
I mean, the first Mistborn's great. Just the book Mistborn.
The first
just
one
stop is, there.
Yeah. That is true. That is a thing. But the second and third ones are just so bad. Like, so infuritingly bad.
Yeah. I have a sneaking suspicion that he would write them differently in a number of ways now. I mean, not only do I feel like he's put more work into crafting some more realistic characters and, like, spreading out his viewpoints and so on, but also, like, he's a clearly a guy who's, like, addicted to ideas, right? And it felt very obvious to me in reading that, like, that trilogy, that as the trilogy went, he had some new idea that his brain was actually chasing, but he wanted to finish this book and just, like, get them out the door.
That's fair.
Yeah. But I don't feel like his more recent stuff has shown that particular issue to me. So I think maybe he's figured out some type of better scheduling or project management system or something. Like, I don't think some of those weaknesses would be there if he were to rewrite them now.
That's fair. I still will just never forgive that the main character of the first book is a pretty well drawn, particularly for like a young Mormon first time, like really successful author, compelling character who gets entirely overshadowed in the subsequent books by the men in her life. It's like so painful. Like just like, I just think about it now. It is like causing me physical discomfort. Like, it's just like, ew, it's just, ew. It's just, ew, 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 ew. Ew. Anyway, Glazer, you got anything you want to say here, or are you ready to talk about
terraforming Mars? I don't really care about that. So whoever's terraforming Mars, please feel free.
Oh, I guess that was me. Sorry, I forgot. We, dear listeners, we had to inadvertently skip a week due to scheduling, so some of my items have been on here for a long time, and I plumb near forgot. So I got to play a couple board games a while back, played Terraforming Mars for the first time ever, and it was a game. It was definitely a game. I know a lot of people really enjoy it. I would probably be willing to play it again, but I did not have a great time with it. There are a lot of neat kind of interlocking systems and a lot of this like back and forth resource management and conversion and you know, how many of these cards do I want to keep? Because it'll cost resources to do that, that I might need to spend on stuff, but I need cards to actually do things and so on. That was sort of interesting, but I feel like there's a feel bad RNG component here. Like I got hit with where virtually every card I drew said things along the lines of, you know, spend 2 temperature to gain 4 oxygen or, you know, whatever combination of resources you want. But I could never draw cards that just said, get X resource to start with. So all of my resources were at 0. I could never spend to like get these favorable exchange rates because I could never get over the hump to start with. So I think that is a definite weakness in the game. So there we go. That's my Terraforming Mars spiel. The next one, though, Food Truck Champion, was also me. That one was super neat. Just a little kind of card drafting game. You're, as you might guess, running a food truck, and you're having to both like entice customers, get the ingredients to make certain things, have a cook to put it all together, and so on to score points. But the cards each fill like 4 different purposes, kind of depending on how they're like, which section of the card. So the ingredients are also recipes and so on, and also like your workers and whatever. And as you draft and do things with them, like as you spend them for something, they actually go back out on the table on top of other stacks for other people to have access to. So that there's a neat kind of tug of war type of thing as people buy stuff up for their own uses, but then potentially have to give it back to let somebody else use it, or maybe even cover up something that somebody else needed to use so that they can't get to it. So I really dug Food Truck Champion.
Nice.
I guess 3 of mine were in a row.
Very here. Disappointed that you're playing this.
You are? Man. Yeah. You don't, you, I figured you knew me well enough to know.
I knew you would. I was just hoping you wouldn't.
Yeah. No, I played the Diablo 4 beta over the weekend, the open beta. I haven't pre-ordered yet, so I did not get in the one the weekend before that. Part of that is due to several other friends and even like Kristen's cousin saying they were going to play, which did give me the chance to test out some party play and even cross-platform. Kristen's cousin and her boyfriend were playing on computers while I played on Xbox. And smooth as could be, voice chat, everything worked super easy. I don't know what else to say. It's Diablo, to run around and kill stuff. I don't super love the
class selection that they came up with in this particular version. They picked like three classes I've never really cared about and two that I've been met on at all. So I played a rogue. It was fine. I did turn out to discover there were some more interesting skills available than I thought, though a lot of the internet Diablo fandom discourse says the skill system is kind of just busted and linear. So we'll see how it goes. Like most of the Diablo games, I'll probably play the campaign through, and bounce in and out with some friends for some quests, and then probably call it good. I'm not a ARPG ladder player or anything. So you started to say something, Roy, though. What was it?
Oh, I just said Diablo fans complaining. Oh, news at 11.
Yeah. You could probably just cut Diablo off and just say fans complaining. Go figure.
My attitude towards Diablo 4 is Diablo 3 was terrible. I know it became amazing.
2 was terrible?
No, 3, excuse me. 3 was terrible.
Wow. Whew, I was worried.
I understand it got better when they like revamped it and turned it kind of into a live service game. But the storyline was one of the stupidest things. I played so many dumb Blizzard games.
You're in luck, Roy. This game appears, as far as I can tell, to totally ignore that Diablo 3 existed.
Oh, great. But my attitude towards actually all Blizzard games now is fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. I'm not playing any more Blizzard games. I'm done. Sorry, StarCraft 27 or whatever will be coming out in a few years. Or WoW Classic, why somebody would want to play WoW like it was 50 years ago. I don't understand.
You got me.
But none of that stuff's for me. So I know it's definitely for Glazer, who is sharpening his his action RPG fingers that he's, going to really be getting it.
Yeah, let's hold our breath, please. I don't like action RPGs. I think I just don't like action RPGs, so I should not play them. That's where I've landed on these. As a general whole, my feeling is that they're not for me anymore.
Don't you play Hades? Isn't Hades an action RPG?
I would say Hades was, for sure.
Well, it's not an RPG at all, but it's a roguelite.
Action roguelite that plays like a Diablo game.
Yeah. Hades was a special case in that it was like one of the best games ever. Fair. You give me more games that are of the quality of Hades, and we'll see, if my perspective changes, you know what I mean?
Okay. I'll keep you updated on Diablo 4 then, just in case.
Yeah, just thanks. Lucky.
It might be the new Hades.
Exactly.
Yeah, it seems the likeliest of scenarios.
Well, I would assume Hades 2 will be the new Hades.
Yeah. That actually is the likeliest of scenarios, yes.
Yeah, that is true.
So there's rumors, heavy rumors of a Skies of Arcadia remake coming. Everyone's talking about it. Some Xbox podcast that gets big scoops said that it's coming. And I don't know if you guys remember, because I would imagine if you listen to this, you listen to every episode. That's what I played it last summer, and it immediately became one of my favorite games ever. And I am very, very, very excited for the potential of this game. So, yes, please, absolutely and immediately. I don't think they even need to do much. Fix the random encounter rate a touch more. Clean up the graphics. Fix, reinstate the Dreamcast sound.
Oh, my goodness.
Call it a day and, you'll just have one of the best games ever. They'll sell a bajillion-ish copies and everyone will be happy.
Yeah. I mean, is it like a remake? Like Final Fantasy VII?
No one knows because this is still just rumors.
Is it a remaster like the Final Fantasy VIII remaster? I don't know.
No one knows yet.
Okay.
No one knows yet.
Just that.
Look, I don't care what it is. Make the game. I'm not even slightly kidding. Just make the game.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued. Let me know as you hear more.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'll play it if it's, like, got quality of life features and is playable on modern consoles without like an emulator. So, yeah.
The game does not even need real quality of life features. Like, it needs... I mean, I guess a save everywhere would be fine.
Yeah.
Like, it just needs the, like... you don't go far beyond save points and on the world map.
Excuse me.
You could save whenever you want anyway. Like, it's not a huge problem. Get the game. Oh, the next thing is Mewtwo, isn't it?
Yeah, we should have alternated our stuff.
Yeah, we didn't do a good job of that this week. Hey, any of you hear that there's a DC CCG coming?
Yeah. Dual something.
We have this access to the same Twitter account, so yes.
Yeah. It was announced a little over a year ago, and I went looking on Reddit earlier today. Dual Force, there we go. It looks like the Reddit there has had no activity in the last 3 months, so that's reassuring.
All of a sudden, all the Marvel Snap people are abuzz about it. So,
huh, interesting.
Well, I mean, like, a bunch of people who play a card game based on Marvel would conveniently most likely be interested in a card game based on DC. So
that's crazy talk. I don't believe you.
Well, Glazer, speaking of Marvel Snap, what are you? I'm going to do a little cross promotion here. What are you currently doing for the Marvel Snap podcast that technically all three of us are on?
Oh, we're pretending Will likes us.
Yeah, I heard that.
So, I mean, dude, everything. What am I not doing for that podcast?
That's true. You're doing everything now.
Paying for the software and the hosting. I'm trying to, like, you want me to, like, just, like, list the things? Do you want me to just list the things? I mean, you asked what are you not doing, so I'm just saying. You always just, like, start listing. Glazer, what are, like, what specific positive steps on your own end are you doing?
Okay, so there are, at our YouTube, which is at Snap Judge Pod on YouTube, it's spelled exactly how you smell Snap Judge Pod. You're not stupid. You know how to spell words.
It doesn't have an E.
What? Hello?
It doesn't have an E.
Yeah.
Oh, it does. Snap Judge Pod does have an E. Snap Judge Pod has an E.
For the YouTube?
Yeah. Like 99.9% sure.
Does not. And it's at Snap Judgments Pod.
Oh, wow. I'm just tired. I'm not doing good brain. Okay. Let's do good brain. Good brain. Go. Good brain. Ready? Good brain says, I am doing a daily YouTube video at Snap Judgments Pod on YouTube. And Snap Judgments Pod, you can get a daily snap take, a less than 10-minute, almost always less than 10-minute video that will tell you about a deck, a card, a theory about the game of Marvel Snap. In addition to that daily video, if it is a deck, there will be a couple of YouTube shorts that will have some gameplay featuring decks that feature that card, or just, if it's a whole deck, games with that deck to show what it can do. In addition to that, because I'm making them on TikTok, there's also a TikTok, which is actually Snap Judge Pod, at Snap Judge Pod on TikTok, which is just the shorts of gameplay. Nothing else but shorts of gameplay. If you just want to watch some quick gameplay and you have TikTok, what do you have to lose? In addition, some further, we are doing a weekly giveaway tomorrow. Fuck knows when Will's getting this up, but soon,
at some point,
I'm doing giveaways of season passes. So there are consistent giveaways of season passes for those of you who are interested. So all you have to do is follow us on Twitter. That's at SnapJudgeCast, and on YouTube at SnapJudgmentsPod. Subscribe, and then, like, weekly there will be, like, a thing to do. I'll post it on Twitter, and if you do it, you will be entered into the contest to win. Cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, again, Glazer is very serious about these weekday videos. Like, we've had the YouTube channel has existed since February 26th, and there's already 42 videos on the channel. So
it's also worth noting that the videos did not exist, like the daily videos didn't start until 3 weeks ago.
So Glazer is
producing on March like 6th.
So if you play Snap, if you play Marvel Snap, Glazer is producing like really top end content for there. It's a great jumping on point if you're making a transition from Thrones to playing the game. If you're used to the kind of advice that Aaron gave when he was participating in the White Book's Thrones content, it's the same kind of analysis, and you should definitely check it out. It is the videos are on YouTube, and we have the Twitter is a great way to access our podcast itself, but it can be found. Our SEO isn't the best because the name is like a little overlaps with other stuff, but you can also find us on all of the like podcatchers out there in the world. So, and sometimes Will's on it a whole two episodes.
Yeah, Will like gets messaged and added and then goes, oops, I didn't see it when it's time for us to do this podcast.
Yep. I really, like, really, truly missed those.
We know.
Would you say that promoting another podcast on your previous podcast is the ultimate danger zone?
No. I would just say that's encouraged. I'd be willing to say me missing obvious messages that I was tagged in, though, is definitely the danger zone.